Last time on This Week in Geek, Vegeta had his sights squarely upon Mike the Birdman Dodd. Can maximum nerdosity win against the Prince of All Saiyans? Find out at thisweekingeek.net.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So damn nerdy.
Welcome back to Beyond the Gauntlet, not recorded live at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario, but recorded from the Birdcage, trademark Jeff DeHaan, 2014. And we are going to be talking gaming, not video games, but tabletop, role-playing, card games, anything that involves your hands and not a controller. I'm Mike the Birdman, but I'm joined with the Game Master himself,
Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet.
And of course, by the man who helped this guy get here. We're joined by the wheel man.
The driver, Jeff DeHaan.
Yes, guys, I am so excited to talk about this. Now, back in January, D&D celebrated its 40th anniversary. And unfortunately, the two main guys behind it, Gary Gygax and his partner, I can't remember his name, I'm sorry, passed away. But the legacy of Dungeons & Dragons continues. There's going to be D&D Next, tentatively for later on this year, which is going to be released. And, well, there's the legacy to look at behind that. There's so many different role-playing games. I mean, I'm involved with TheseWarriorsAreTerrible.com. Hopefully by the time you hear this, my Neon Genesis Evangelion episode using GURPS or either Monsters vs. Kaiju should be out. Where do we start with this one, Chris? Because I'm involved in some of your games. I'm actually waiting to jump into one right now.
Well, I think the first thing we should start with is the fact that Jamie McBurney has actually been shanghaied by a group of orcs and carted off into the forest. That's why he's not joining us today.
No!
Well, that's because
He didn't have a high enough CMD, and that's why he got all grappled up.
Actually, no. See, Jamie is running on such an old system. He's using Thaco.
Oh, my God.
That's the problem. Because he's still using armor class 0, and these orcs are using the new Pathfinder rules. And this is the reason he got captured. He's been carted off into the forest. Who knows if he's in a cooking pot or some sort of orcish whorehouse.
Orcish whorehouse?
Yeah, orcish whorehouse. He's probably going to be missing for the rest of the episode, at least.
Does this mean we're going to have to form a rescue party?
He split the party.
It's
his fault.
Party, yes. We're gonna need a classic group of adventurers to go after him. We need a wizard, a cleric, a fighter, and a rogue. And right now we got the Birdman, who is clearly a wizard because man, he can
that or a bard, one or the other.
Yes, and I have been akin to a cleric since people seem to come into my store and immediately get better moods about them. So I obviously have some sort of healing power.
So your domain is your store, and that's where you draw power from your deity and get spells.
Correct, exactly.
This is getting nerdy.
Exactly, but we'll go after Jamie when the episode's done.
I guess Jamie's our fighter because I probably qualify as more of a rogue.
Yeah. I would say we lost the fighter. We got to go after the fighter. Anyway,
get off my cookies.
Where to begin would probably be
how we all started playing.
Well, yeah, I would like to touch on a little bit what you kind of touched on in the intro there for a little bit first.
All right,
okay. There is kind of a shift in how the role-playing community is treating Dungeons & Dragons right now. Now, there's a story to this that I am going to kind of fill the general public into. Right now, there is a game called Pathfinder that is currently out there, and it is decimating the adventure gaming market. And then there is Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition, as well as the 5th edition or Next, which is currently in works. Now, here's the problem. When Gary Gygax died, he left the 3.5 game system as open license, and this means to those of you who don't know, any company can pick it up and make money off of this product.
Hmm.
Now, the problem is Hasbro owns the name Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they didn't like the fact that the game system that they were supporting was in a will of the creator left as open license. And so they basically said, butts to you. Stole the Dungeons & Dragons name. Well, technically not stole. They properly owned it. But created the 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons system out of this, which proceeded to tank in stores. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Piazza, a fantastic company that was making a lot of splat material for 3.5 Dungeons & Dragons and had the Pathfinder magazine, ended up saying, hey, why don't we take the 3.5 system, iron out the bugs that everyone complains about, and rebrand it as Pathfinder. So meanwhile, the Dungeons & Dragons game, which is the one technically having its anniversary, is nothing like the original game, because the original game has been rebranded to Pathfinder.
Hmm.
So that's just a little bit of backstory to the entire phenomenon that is currently rocking the adventure gaming market right now because of that.
Well, yeah, in honor of the 40th anniversary, too, not too long ago, I watched a trailer for Dungeons & Dragons documentary. And the thing that surprised me the most was how long D&D has actually been around.
Yeah, I didn't think it was 40 years.
Exactly. It's not that I thought, you know, oh, well, role-playing games must be pretty new, you know, something from the 90s or something like that. But I thought it was at least 80s. I didn't think it went all the way back as far as it did into the 70s.
Well, like Gary Gygax originally created a game system called Chainmail, and Chainmail was a gaming system that was based off of just feudal Europe. And this system allowed you to become a knight and basically do knightly things like combat and tournaments and jousts and actually have a serfdom, basically. And this game is eventually went through the metamorphosis by adding in Tolkien elements to it with orcs and elves and stuff. The original edition of D&D, basically your playable character classes were literally dwarf,
fellowship,
dwarf, elf, wizard,
hobbit,
and hobbit, basically, for lack of a better term, or human. So in the beginning, there wasn't even the ability, the creative flux that the game has now.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that came out of all this, and another pioneer in the role-playing field, though more so with computer games, was the Ultima series, and Richard Garriott would play a lot of his Ultima games with Lord British would be based on his old D&D campaigns.
Yeah, and the Ultima series were fantastic games. I remember...
Weird, though.
Oh, God, yes. They were weird, but I remember playing all the original ones on the PC all the way up to Ultima Online, which was one of the first online games in and around the time of EverQuest coming out. But the whole role-playing experience, the ability that somebody wants to partake the role of another in a gaming environment, whether it be via PC gaming, console gaming, or by rolling dice and pen and paper with a storyteller, has been around for a very long time.
Or even, like, cosplaying or whatever. You can just say it's make-believe, you know? It's
exactly.
It's putting yourself into that other kind of role.
I mean, what little kid growing up didn't like, you know, pretend to be a soldier or pretend to be Captain America or pretend to be, you know, a character from a cartoon that
he
watched.
Or a wrestler.
Or a wrestler or whatever. So this is just an extension to that. It gave rules to it. It gave structure to it. And it gave an ability that anybody could do it as long as somebody was willing to weave a tale that the person was part of.
Exactly. Well, that and it gave it rules. So you couldn't just say, oh, I kicked your ass because...
Exactly. And see, and there's a lot of bad hype that has happened over the years with Dungeons & Dragons and stuff, where people have blamed it on atrocities that have happened in towns and whatnot. I mean, even Orangeville itself here has a bad experience with that from the late 90s. And a lot of role-playing gaming has been getting a lot of bad rep due to this sort of thing. I mean, you look at the church constantly accusing D&D of being devil play, mm-hmm. and everything. But when it all boils down to it, role-playing games are just a way for people to get together and play make-believe. And there's a storyteller, and when problems arise in the game, they are resolved by players talking it out and rolling dice.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing evil about it.
Yeah, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be dice per se. Like, cosplay is more about the costume and putting yourself into that character as opposed to actually reenacting anything per se, but it's still kind of in the same wheelhouse, I feel, you know? But that's exactly it. It's no different than playing a video game or something, you know? You're putting yourself into that character and you're going through the motions. Like, I mean, I got into role-playing games pretty late. in life, so to speak. Well, I was in high school, but it's not like, you know, 12 or 13. Like, I was into my 15, 16 years old kind of thing, like tail end of high school when I got into gaming. And I remember how strange it was. I'm like, my second cousin or whoever I played with, I'm like, you fight with dice. You know, like, I didn't get the concept at first. And, you know, we created characters and started out. And, you know, he was a really great storyteller, which helps. I mean, obviously, if you got somebody who's a shit storyteller, it's not going to, it's not going to be fun. So we always wanted him to be the game master, because it wasn't D&D that I played. So it was a GM, not a DM. But we always, because he was really good at weaving a tale like that. But once, when you do find that, it, you know, you can really escape. And we would, because it was me and a couple of cousins, and we'd literally get together for a weekend in the summer, and from Friday night until Sunday afternoon, that's all we did. You know, we'd go through a couple of cases of pop and no sleep, you know, for an entire weekend until one of us finally passed out, and then we'd take a couple-hour break and then back at it again, you know? Like, it was...
That's the way it goes.
It's immersive, you know? It really, it takes you away. And that's what's really fun about it. And people don't get it, but it's kind of funny when people don't get it, because you're only limited, literally, by your imagination. Like, yes, sure, there's rules and everything with the games, but as far as, like, orcs and dinosaurs and this and that and robots and Robotech and everything, if you can think of it...
You can do it.
Exactly.
And there's game systems for everything. I mean, there's some of the more popular ones, like Pathfinder, Dungeons & Dragons. There's also the World of Darkness, which touches
I've played a lot of.
World of Darkness is a system that touches a lot on the mythos behind werewolves and vampires and hunters,
witches,
and ghosts,
changelings.
And changelings.
Yeah. A lot of supernatural.
It's a very supernatural heavy system. And then you also have the Rift system, which they can pretty much throw anything, any topic they want at it. Everything from undead hordes to spacefaring future tech.
Rifts was the first game I played, and that's something I wanted to get to. I wanted to ask you guys, it was probably D&D for both of you, but what was the first things you played? With me, with Rifts, it's a Palladium-based game, so it's a D20 game similar to like Dungeons & Dragons, and it uses multiple different kinds of dice. But the story behind it is that these dimensional portals or rifts opened up, so you'd get all these different creatures from different dimensions, and it could be an alternate Earth or it could be a completely different planet. And that's like Chris said, you know, you could just change everything. And that was what made that game really cool, is that you were basically unlimited. You could create a world and say a rift opened up and that world came out kind of thing. But what did you guys play? Like, what was your first experiences? Anyways,
my first experience was with my friend, Jamie Decker. And he got me into D&D. I think we were 11 or 12, maybe at the latest 13. It was just before high school. I'm thinking maybe grade 8 year. He wasn't a particularly great storyteller, but he told the system well. And I learned on Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2.0, so long before third edition launched. And it was, I remember... He used to make me roll my stats in order, and I would always get a goddamn cleric every time. I wanted to play a fighter, and it just never happened. And I remember every mission was always like, go kill the orc base. That's the only one I remember. But the one that had the most impact on me was World of Darkness. I used to be his game master for that. And another one that I fell in love with, and I still love this world, my friend Ryan, we're not friends anymore, but he got me in the Shadowrun, because he played the Genesis game and the Super Nintendo game, because I knew a guy, and he loaned him the Genesis version, and somehow we got the second edition book from Fossa, who's unfortunately no longer around, and we started playing Shadowrun, and it was me, my friend Trevor... I think one or two other guys, maybe my friends Brad and Gavin, and we would get together every weekend at the Owen Sound City Library, and we would play upstairs in the children's section, because nobody was up there. We're like, okay, can we, big tables, comfy chairs, we can roll dice and no one cares. That rhymed. Neat. sorry. And I just remember having all these adventures, and then Ryan would, the best story he ever told was, Chris, you'll probably know some of what I'm talking about here. I had a character named Dade Mulder, Dade from Hackers, Fox Mulder from The X-Files. I'm a fanboy. And my character became an ant shaman. And ant shamans are bad news. Bug shamans you don't want to be. And he had it that I played right into the ant queen's plans the entire time, and I had no idea. And when eventually I fulfilled the goal of summoning a queen and building a hive, she took my magic. And I'm sitting there left holding the bag. And I remember as a role player, I'm thinking, holy shit, dude, you got me. It was so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, good times. Next.
How about you, Chris?
Well, my first experience with any sort of role-playing games was, I remember when I was a young kid, probably 9 or 10, my uncle actually had a Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition Monster Manual and Player Handbook that he had on his bookcase at his house. And anytime I'd go and visit him, I'd have to pull those books out, and I'd actually read them. I didn't actually get a chance to play 2nd Edition until much later. But my first role-playing experience as far as getting to play a game was actually playing the Ghostbusters role-playing game in 1988. I played that over at a friend's house, and we actually got to use our proton packs and hunt ghosts.
Well, I don't
remember much
streams.
About the game other than it was very heavy D6 related. We had to roll
West
a lot of
games,
D6s.
Baby.
The first experience with gaming that I actually remember to the point of remembering the stories and remembering, God, I'm hooked now, mm-hmm. was gaming when I was when I first moved back to Canada after living in the States for a long time. My buddy Jason, who now lives in Calgary, got me playing 2nd Edition D&D again. And much like what Mike said over there, he would make me roll my stats in order and all that stuff, and I always ended up with like the crappiest array of stats ever. And I just remember making a cleric, funny enough, who actually worshiped the domain of fire. And I remember going into this goblin camp, and we were trying to sneak through the goblin camp to rescue a prisoner or something. And I remember going from tent to tent. And I was performing my sneak skill very well until I ran into a tent that had three goblins in it. And I opened the flap, walked in the tent, and all three goblins got out of their seats and were like, "Hey, what you're doing here?" And then they all three of them literally speared me at once with their spears.
Ouch.
And Jason, who was the DM at the time, rolled three critical hits on all three of them. And then an ogre wandered by from outside, and it was basically like the goblins went 1, 2, 3, and all speared me at the same time. And then the ogre walked by and went 4. The goblins had killed me already, but the ogre turned me into paste. And I just remember that as my first experience, that my level 1 cleric, who I was looking forward to using things, cleric spells that a cleric shouldn't have, mm-hmm. that were slightly in the wizard school, that I would be able to do all these awesome things, and my first attempt at doing anything, I horribly got massacred.
Yeah, well, yeah, with the Rifts gaming, because there was only three of us, we'd always do two characters each, which could get confusing, but we tried to be pretty specific about who said what and this and that and everything, but we'd always do two characters each, so our party was a decent size. And especially early on, because our GM, who coincidentally enough also lives in Calgary now, but... he, because he was such a great storyteller, and because he was the only one that actually played before, me and my other cousin, we had a lot of characters who we didn't really get to know very much because they died pretty hastily. I've played a little bit of D&D, not a lot. The other game that I've played the most, and it's probably my favorite role-playing game, is the World of Darkness series. I played the Vampire series, and again, that comes from... I played Vampire the Masquerade.
Not the Requiem.
Oh, hold on. I played Requiem as well, but the first one I played was Vampire the Masquerade, which was all right. Not the best storyteller and GM. The second game I played was Requiem, and this guy told such a phenomenal story, and there's things that happened that he didn't even plan on that were perfect. Like me and my roommate at the time, her character and my character were characters that we had from the Requiem game that we brought into the Masquerade one. So they knew each other prior to this party getting together, and there were circumstances involved, and they got blood bonded, and it wasn't planned. It was just, it was really cool circumstances that weren't planned, and it was one of the most fun gaming experiences I had with those games.
See, I love the old World of Darkness with, like, you know, the different clans with the Camarilla, and it was the splat material for that was so awesome, especially the Time of Judgment stuff.
And I think the most impressive thing about role-playing games in general, I mean, especially if you take into account, like, the games like the World of Darkness system, Shadowrun, Rifts, Dungeons & Dragons, all the main heavy-hitter games, the amount of immersive material that has been produced for these games to give backstory to the world, to flush out the actual way the game works, the amount of creativity dumped into these games is the collaborative effort of so many different creators going into a game, and it's so impressive when they have created not only the rule system to the game, but like hundreds of years of backlore to the game as well.
And one of the coolest things is that while they have all these rules and they've crafted and created this world so perfectly, at the same time, some of the best games are so unrigid. Like, they're so free-flowing, and it's like, you know what? If you don't like this, you can, you know, here's a way to modify it to suit your game better.
Oh, heck, when I run games at the store, I mean, I don't use any pre-written adventures or anything like that. All my games always come off the top of my head. I work that way. When it comes to running games, I work better running my own idea of what should be going on than running something out of a book. And I find, but I draw upon the lore of the world. Yeah. So, you know, I do know how things came to be. I just kind of meld my own universe, alternate verse out of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that's I wanted to mention, one name I wanted to bring up, and you wouldn't think of this name whenever you talk about gaming. It's not necessarily role-playing gaming, but Wil Wheaton. That's right, Wesley Crusher, who I'm sure there's an entire generation of people who only know him as that guest guy from Big Bang Theory. But be that as it may, he's actually a very prominent name when it comes to tabletop gaming, thanks to his YouTube show, Tabletop.
Yeah, and he does the whole Geek and Sundry thing, too.
Yeah, with Felicia Day.
Yep.
I actually met, we interviewed Wil Wheaton on Twig, I think in our first year, actually. My co-host at the time, Steve Saylor, virtually gave this guy the best verbal beige that ever existed. It was kind of funny. But it was funny. I went to PAX 2010 when it was in Boston for its first year for PAX East. Wil Wheaton knew who the hell I was. I was walking by him with my friend Justin. And he's like, oh, hey, Mike Dodd. I've been podcasting like 3 years. How the hell do you know me? And it was so cool. He signed my friend Justin Eacock's dice bag. He talked with us. They were playing live-action D&D at that time. They were doing hex squares on the PAX floor using 4.0 rules, which I know suck. But it was really neat just to see him just getting involved. He had his PAX scarf on. I really respect his thing, and it was really cool. He played a game with a guy that I know, Chris Pramus from Green Ronin. He played, I think it was the Dragon Age game over on his tabletop channel, which I think is really cool. But yeah, he speaks really well for the community. He did a keynote at PAX that year that I went, 2010, and it was like, we are gamers, we are Horde, we are Alliance. It just gave this awesome gamer rally cry. Like, seriously, look up the PAX keynote on this sometime.
The other great thing about Wil Wheaton that I really, really like and his show Table is the fact that he not only deals in the role-playing side, but for those of you who don't want to jump into the whole super immersive experience, he also does the board gaming side of things. And
Ticket to Ride!
There are board games out there, more so than you'd find in your average big box retailer. Like things like games like Settlers of Catan, Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne.
Well, I feel like they're board games and like tabletop gaming, not necessarily just role playing game, but board games and everything are kind of coming back into fashion, so to speak.
Well, and I think a lot of that has to do with people are recognizing the social aspect of the gaming.
It's fun!
Of sitting around a table with a bunch of friends and having a laugh while you're playing a game. I mean, look at the game Cards Against Humanity.
I was about to mention that.
Unfortunately, it hasn't quite hit mass market retail level yet, but you can order it off their website. But it's going to. There's no doubt about it.
Well, these guys have made so much. Well,
and all this game is basically Mad Libs the game.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know what Cards Against Humanity is, it has some raunchy humor in it, it is definitely... something not meant for children.
But if you're looking for a more family-friendly version, there's a game called Apples to Apples, which is
very similar,
and it's a little less crude, so that's probably a little more family-friendly than Cards Against Humanity. But continue.
But the game basically is played in such a way where each player is dealt a hand of cards, and then every round there's a judge that reads off a card, and it's usually a fill-in-the-blank sort of card, and then you take a card from your hand that you think is funniest that will win the judge's favor, throw it in the center of the table. The judge reads off all the answers, and hilarity ensues.
And while there is kind of points awarded if he picks your card and everything, the points...
don't really mean much.
Don't really matter much. It's one of the most fun games I've ever played, and it's purely for the social aspect, for getting together and just laughing together. I've played with both of you on a couple of occasions.
And it gets really crude, but hilarious.
But it's a lot of fun. Like, the tagline for it is the party game for horrible people. But don't even need that. There's lots of games like Quelf is a great game, which you actually can find in your big box stores like Walmart and everything, that... it's about stupid stunts and things like that, and I've got friends who have played that and swear by it and say it is a fabulously fun game.
See, for every board game that you've heard of, there's a dozen or more that you haven't heard of.
And that doesn't make them any less fun.
No, and this is the thing. It's the board gaming community is what you know of is the very tip of the iceberg. I mean, I wish at the store that I could carry every board game that is available, but I would literally need a store four times the size of the store I have just to carry it.
Have you ever walked into Snakes and Lattes in Toronto?
Oh, yeah.
Wall-to-wall board games, and they probably still haven't scratched the surface.
Exactly. And the thing is, board games are just such a fantastic way to get together with friends and have a good time.
It really is.
And you know what? For the price of a lot of board games, I mean, there's the price range from $20 all the way up to like $80. But the bigger the board game and the more pieces they are is the reason why they go up in value. Mm-hmm. I actually run at the store every Friday night from 7 to 10 o'clock, a board game night where you can come down to the store and check out games. That are in the market, and anybody who actually comes into the store and purchases a board game that night, I give them a 10% discount on the board games. Mm-hmm. To come on out. It's $5, which is for 3 hours of entertainment for $5.
It's better than a movie.
Yeah,
and you get to try out a whole bunch of new board games and everything. And so come out to the store Friday nights from 7 to 10. Check out the Gauntlets board game night. And I'm thinking I might also start a second board game night because they're becoming so much more popular.
Yeah. Because that's the problem. Like, the stigma is that when people think of board games,
they think of Monopoly and life and Pictionary.
And it's not that those games still
aren't
fun.
Pursuit.
Like, one of the great things about Monopoly, to keep itself fresh, is that they've licensed the crap out of their name.
Street Fighter Monopoly.
You can find an Opoly about anything.
There's Pony Monopoly.
My brother got Zombieopoly from his wife for Christmas, and they've played it so many times and, you know, love it, and it's great. And you can find, like, just about anything. Google it and look it up and see how many different Monopolies you can find. It's insane. You can find one for anything that you like. So, I mean, that's one way that they've stayed relevant. But
same with, like, Risk, too. There's a Mass Effect version of Risk now.
Yeah. But
actually, Chris, you've got my Metal Gear games down there.
And your Halo.
There's
a Star Trek Settlers of Catan.
I've heard about that.
I've had it at the store on numerous occasions.
That's where I saw it. That's where I discovered it. But, so, you know, licensing your name out is one way to get a game to keep it fresh. But over the years, like, Monopoly's been around for how many years? Life, Pictionary, all that. So many games have been created in that time, but they don't really get recognized because video games took over and the internet eliminated. How many people play Scrabble on Facebook but wouldn't necessarily pick up the board and, you know, actually do it?
Yeah, I mean, there's even online versions of Cards Against Humanity. One of the coolest things I discovered through a friend of mine, Noah Antweiler, Spoonie, he found a Flash version of the Aliens board game. I didn't know this thing existed.
There's an Aliens board game?
Oh my god, it's so cool. Complicated, but cool. where you play as like Space Marines versus aliens, and they can move a certain way. It's really neat, and you can even punch them, though you don't do like any damage, but you can get them off you. If you shoot them in a certain hex, you get splashed with acid.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really intense. I mean, board gaming, I'm so glad so many people are getting into it.
Well,
now
that's what I'm saying. It's coming back into style.
Finally,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think for the longest time there was this kind of stigma that, you know, if you played a role playing game or a board game, that it was taboo and you were kind of a nerd and stuff like that. But a lot of things like Big Bang Theory and Comic Book Men and all these shows are starting to pull people out and say, you know what, it's okay to be a geek.
Well, yeah, they say that. And you know what I think a big part of it is in, while it's kind of a negative reason, but I think the downturn in the economy got people looking at more affordable ways of entertainment. And it's like, yeah, we could all go out to the bar and spend $40-$50 and everything, or we have this game that's already here. Why not get together, bring some drinks, grab some snacks? It's cheaper, and we all still get to hang out and have fun.
I mean, honestly, one great thing, and Chris, you've carried this in your store a number of times. For example, the Pathfinder Beginner Box. It's like $40, I think, or something like that.
Yep.
That's everything you need to play for like four or five people. And you can reach up to level, you could, in theory, keep going with it up beyond level five.
It does come with a level 1-4 adventure, but I mean, if the person who you choose to be the storyteller catches on enough, he could weave his own tales after that.
Yeah, and if you buy, like, if you spend probably about $70, you could probably get the core book, which is everything you need, and the player's guide. That's all you need. You don't need any of the splat material, because literally, here is the toolkit, here's the world as presented, go nuts.
Really, the only two books you would need to fully run a campaign with anything is the core rulebook and a beastry.
Yeah, pretty much that's it. And
any other book is just an optional thing. Because there's enough of the Dungeon Master material in the core book that the Dungeon Master could get by running it.
Well, geez, even Rifts, the core book actually has enough introductory monsters to it that you can run a game with literally just the core book for a while if you need to.
One of the neat things I like about Rift, although I've only ever played the game once, is they created licensed materials. There's Robotech. There are Ninja Turtles. Yep. Do you know how much this makes me happy? Oh, although, it's weird, though. I'm surprised certain companies haven't picked up on certain properties. Like, why is there no G.I. Joe role-playing game? Or why is there
was.
No... What? Who made it?
It was from the 80s. It was the same guys that did the Ghostbusters one.
West End Games?
Yeah.
Shit, man.
It didn't last very long, but it was there.
There's been several versions of the Indiana Jones role-playing game. There has been Tales from the Crypt. I'm trying to think of other materials that I've seen out there licensed. There's multiple Supers games.
You can get a role playing game from pretty much any topic you can think of. I mean, if you want superheroes, there's Hero System, there's Silver Age Sentinels, there is the Marvel one, the DC one, there is the Playdium's
Heroes Unlimited.
If you want to get Star Wars has the Edge multiple of the Empire.
Editions.
Well, the current one is Edge of the Empire, but before that there was the D20 Star Wars. There's a Firefly role playing game. There's Robotech, there is, like you said, there's Playdium's done Ninja Turtles. They've done the list goes on and on and on. There's a pony role playing game. There's if you want something cyberpunk, you can get into Shadowrun
or literally cyberpunk.
If you want swords and sorcery, you can get into swords and sorcery, or Dungeons and Dragons,
or Lord of the Rings,
or Lord of the Rings, or Dungeon Crawl Classics, or
Well, and there's even historical role playing.
Exactly.
Like one of the books that I got, I'm hopefully going to be making a Dungeons and Dragons documentary in hopefully the next year or two. And one of the two source books, I bought this from this guy up at Owen Sound. His name is Chris. I have a D&D second edition source book on how to run a game in the time of Charlemagne.
Wow,
that is so cool. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know this existed. You could do historical D&D. And I'm so glad the stigma is finally starting to go away. Although it's funny, there was a member of my extended family who I told, oh yeah, I'm doing this thing with Dungeons and Dragons. Does that mean you're worshipping the devil? Yes, that's exactly what it means. I'm going to go drink my goat's blood now.
Again, and that roils back to the fact that, you know,
Mazes and
whole,
Monsters with Tom Hanks?
There's this stigma thing with the various churches saying that D&D is bad just because of certain events that happened in the 1980s and 80s. Like I said, Orangeville had a situation.
Now, what happened with the Orangeville sitch?
I don't know much about it, but apparently a kid went into one of the schools, I think it was ODSS, killed a bunch of people, and the church blamed it on Dungeons and Dragons. Well,
you think that kind of information would be public record.
And it's he used a pair of nunchucks and an axe or something.
It's no different than any other school shooting in the States where they blame Marilyn Manson and video games and this and that, and it's like...
You know what?
The problem is most of these kids or most of these people that have these things happen, it would have happened regardless of what
was
going
exactly.
on. If someone you're going to snap regardless.
If someone's going to look at Chris Benoit and be like, I bet he played role-playing games when he was a kid.
You know what? If I ever go apeshit and you could quote me on this, I'm blaming Raffy, Licorice, and Swiffer dry cloths. That will be in my note that I leave behind.
Okay.
Just because I want to blame something so absurd. So people say, okay, he was mentally ill, not, oh man, that my dog. He played video games. He played D&D.
No, you know what? I'd like to see you do something legitimate. Be like, I blame the internet.
Yep, I blame the internet. I specifically blame, I don't know, what's a really popular site? Reddit or something.
Probably
The Onion.
Yeah, The Onion. The Onion drove me to kill.
Oh, dear.
But I love the fact that now there are communities popping up. And one of the best events for this is I'm going to go back to Toot and Pax's horn, despite their recent problems in the media. I first learned last night on Earth, because I was bored, I couldn't find any panels that I wanted to go, and I'm just walking around the floor, I've got money burning a hole in my pocket, I don't want to spend it, someone entertain me, and I see this board of zombies on it, I'm walking by like, hey man, what's this? Sit down, I'll show you. And I brought that game, and for like 3 summers here at my house, we would play endless hours of Last Night on Earth. It actually got to the point where I went on a website, bought the Photoshop template for the cards, and we made custom characters. We made the guy from Breaking Bad. We made Walter White in his underwear. We made Chuck Green from Dead Rising 2. Conan, RoboCop, John McClane, and I think like Screech from Saved by the Bell.
And there's been so many zombie games too, board games. There's Zombies,
which is like the little miniatures, right?
Which is like a modular game that's constantly adjusting itself. There's Last Night on Earth, which has its own soundtrack, which is badass.
Yeah.
Then there's Zombicide, which is a current one, which is almost like mixing zombies with Last Night on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge game, and it's very very well done. Right down to you can't make noise because the zombies are going to come after you. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of board games available. Like this past Friday night, we played Galaxy Trucker, which is a game that you literally have to build a spaceship and then race it around the galaxy and dodging asteroids. And every time an asteroid hits you, you break up. And the whole premise of the game is you're trying to pick up cargo and deliver it in a race fashion. And the person who makes it to the finish line with most of his ship intact wins.
Well, that's cool.
Whenever we got together at the Gauntlet for New Year's, I remember we played a game called Nuts. And it was just, it's a card game, but I mean, still qualifies for the conversation here. And it was just all different squirrels and stuff, and there was certain nut points, and it's like, okay, so you've got a card that's worth like 7 nuts or whatever and this and that, and it was just all acorns and squirrels, and you're trying to take points from other players and everything. And while it seemed weird at first, and there was 4 of us playing, and 4 or 5, and none of us actually knew had played before, but we after the first game we got the hang of it pretty quick, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
you know, so you never know what you'll find, and that's a game that, because it's a card game, it's $10.
You know, there's something we really haven't talked about: collectible card games.
Yes.
In fact, actually, what was everybody's first collectible card game?
I didn't collect many. Most of the time, if I collected collectible cards, it was just for
movie
the cards.
Movie cards? Or...
like, you know what? We should like almost do an entire episode just on collectible card games, Mike.
You know what? Let's save that.
Because we're getting short on time this time.
Yeah, because unfortunately we're recording kind of late tonight. So
yeah.
We can continue this. This is another two-parter.
It could be.
Because I would love just to talk to you guys about Marvel Overpower, Star Wars, the collectible card game.
You know, the Decipher one?
The Decipher one, yeah.
I've actually played more collectible card game video games than actual collectible card games, which is kind of sad.
Let's wrap this up by going around the table one more time and list your favorite role-playing game and maybe
favorite
your favorite board game.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I guess I'll go first. My favorite role-playing game, as I said, I didn't play many. World of Darkness really... I guess because I played it in my adult years, really captured, I found that a lot of fun, but I was raised on Rifts. I played that throughout, like, half of high school, and went through so many characters, and we'd get together almost every weekend for the span of, like, 3 years, you know, so I played that a lot.
I'm jealous the fact that you had that long running a campaign.
Well, it wasn't necessarily one campaign, but we'd... Because what we do is we'd take turns being GM, but we kept using the same characters. Because our GMs, we'd switch it up, but we'd say we'd be fair with bringing our characters into games, and we'd ask others about certain experience points, so it didn't seem like we were ripping off and giving our characters more experience.
Yeah.
If anything, anytime I GM'd, which was usually a real piss-poor game, I wasn't necessarily that great. I wasn't the most organized, but... if anything else, I probably gave my characters less experience than I should have because I didn't want to take away from the other players. But yeah, like those were my two biggest experiences when it came to role-playing games. As far as non-role-playing games, it was tough because growing up, I had 2 older sisters. The closest one to me was 6 years older. So board games were starting to get out of fashion with the family pretty well. I was still into my childhood. So I didn't play a lot as a kid. I always loved Pictionary. Because I loved the guessing and trying to draw and everything. So that was always fun. Cards Against Humanity goes without saying, and we talked a lot about that. Oh, geez, there's so many.
What about you, Mike?
I'd say my favorite role-playing game, it's a tie right now. I really like Pathfinder, and this is going to be a big surprise. I used to friggin' hate Swords and Sorcery. And it wasn't, Chris, until I started playing in your games, I gave it a second chance. And in fact, another confession, I guess, is your games were the longest running I've ever been in where it was a consistent campaign with consistent people. The games I used to play with my friends, it would either be me with the other GMs. So I don't count that as, you know, it's weird playing just 2 people playing a role-playing game. You're basically playing like...
It really is. I've done solo campaigns before.
It feels like you're playing grab ass. It's just... it's weird. Still can be fun, but weird.
Clearly, you haven't played grab ass properly.
But yeah, it would be Pathfinder and probably Shadowrun. Shadowrun gave me so many good memories, and the world I love. Magic and tech. It's everything I like from D&D, but with guns. And that really made it for me. Plus the whole hacking the Matrix thing. Favorite non-traditional board game? Last Night on Earth. Just the fact how intense the games would get between me and my friends. Like putting gas in the truck. We're each down to 1 hit point. Our guns run out of ammo at the same time. And we're like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Can we do it? Can we do it? I haven't had a... The fact that I can put the words pulse-pounding board game in one sentence... blows my mind. Never thought that would happen. More intense than any movie or sporting event.
Excellent.
Mic drop.
Well, when it comes to me, the role playing game that I know the best and the one that I run at the store the most is Pathfinder.
Yeah.
I know how to run a Pathfinder game, and I'm a DM. I very rarely get to be a player anymore.
One of these days, whenever I actually dig up some free time, which is probably unlikely, I'll have to actually join in, because all I've done for the last year, and I can't believe this podcast has been going on for nearly a year. We're only a couple months out.
Jeez.
But I hear you two talk about Pathfinder. I'd love if I ever had some free time to finally sit in on a game one of these days.
Right now, I'm actually the only game that's happening at my store that I actually get to be a player in is a Shadowrun game. And I'm getting my second taste of Shadowrun. I had my first taste of Shadowrun about 5 years ago, and it was a very brief introduction, but now I'm actually getting a chance to experience the game. And I got to tell you, I agree with Mike. The magic mixed with the tech is amazing. And this is one game I'm looking forward to knowing the rules better, just so I can run my own games, because my cogs are spinning on the creative level where I just have to run something.
Well, let me ask you this, Chris. I love Shadowrun too. Would you rather be a DM or a player? Because I can run it.
It's a matter
of time.
It's a matter of time at the moment, Mike, because I think the problem is I have more will for gaming than I have time to game.
Oh, I know the feeling, man. Believe me.
As far as non-games, okay, you're talking pulse-pounding board games. One of my favorite board games is Battlestar Galactica. The game is basically...
You yelling at people, yelling you're a Cylon?
The premise behind the game is you are literally on Battlestar Galactica trying to survive. It's a game where you have to team up to beat the game. However, one of you is a Cylon and a traitor, but nobody knows who it is.
That's actually interesting.
Except for the Cylon himself.
When we were playing Nuts on New Year's, there was another table that Chris was at, and they were playing Battlestar. So,
and it can get very, very, very...
Intense,
because nobody knows who anybody is. As far as another one, probably my other favorite board game, I'm a huge fan of Dominion, which is a deck-building card game, which is not a collectible card game, but it comes all contained in the box, and you basically buy cards and add them to your deck as the game goes on, and it's really, really cool. God, there's just so many board games that I love. Cosmic Encounters is also another fantastic one. But I think that's all the time we have right now, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, next time when we get a little bit more time, we'll talk about collectible card games, because that can be a lot of fun and can drain your wallet pretty quickly.
And something else we're going to be trying in the near future on the show is picking an artist or a writer in the comic book world and doing a whole show just based around an artist or a writer.
And we've also been talking about commentaries on cartoons and whatnot, yeah. And obviously you heard in our last episode... We have a shit ton. So these guys are raiding my digital treasure troves. And yeah, we'll start doing commentaries. We might even do movies like The Wolverine or Watchmen or something. So
all right.
I guess, guys, until next time, please check out the Facebook page. There are links below. We are on Twitter at Beyond the Gauntlet Podcast.
That's
right?
Correct.
And you can reach me if you want to reach the show. Feedback at thisweekingeek.net. And as always, guys, make sure that you have your hit points topped up, you got healing potions, and anything else. Chris, as our DM, sign us out.
Hold
All right,
on.
Guys, it's time for Mike to grab a spell book, me, my holy symbol, and Jeff, you got to go grab your daggers, because we got to go save Jamie from those orcs now, because who knows what's going on with him. Roll initiative.
Dungeons and Dragons. Satan's game. Your children, like it or not, are attracted in their weaker years to the occult, and a game like D&D fuels their imagination and makes them feel special while drawing them deeper and deeper into the bowels of El Diablo. This afternoon, the Dead Alewives Watchtower invites you to sit in on an actual gaming session. Observe the previously unobservable as a hidden camera takes you to the inner sanctum of Dungeons and Dragons.
Galstaff, You have entered the door to the north. You are now by yourself, standing in a dark room. The pungent stench of mildew emanates from the wet dungeon walls.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
I cast a spell.
Where's the Mountain Dew?
In the fridge, duh.
I want to cast a spell.
Can I have a Mountain Dew?
Yes, you can have a Mountain Dew. Just go get it.
I can cast any of these, right? On the list?
Yes, any of the first level ones.
I'm going to get a soda. Anyone want one? Hey, Graham, I'm not in the room, right?
What room?
I want to cast Magic Missile.
The room where he's casting all these spells from.
He hasn't cast anything yet.
I am, though, if you'd listen. I'm casting Magic Missile.
Why are you casting Magic Missile? There's nothing to attack here.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Fine. You attack the darkness. There's an elf in front of you.
Whoa!
That's me, right?
He's wearing a brown tunic, and he has gray hair and blue eyes.
No, I don't. I have gray eyes.
Let me see that sheet.
Well, it says I have blue, but I decided I wanted gray eyes.
Whatever. Okay, you guys can talk to each other now if you want.
Hello.
Hello.
I am Galstaff, Sorcerer of Light.
Then how come you had to cast Magic Missile?
you guys are being attacked.
Do I see that happening?
No, you're outside by the tavern.
Cool, I get drunk.
There are seven ogres surrounding you.
How could they surround us? I had Morgan Titan's magical watchdog cast.
No, you didn't.
I'm getting drunk. Are there any girls there?
I totally did. You asked me if I wanted any equipment before this adventure, and I said no. But I need material components for all my spells, so I cast Morgan Titan's faithful watchdog.
But you never actually cast it.
Roll the dice to see if I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, you are.
Are there any girls there?
Yeah.
I did, though. I completely said when you asked me...
No, you didn't. You didn't actually say that you were casting the spell. So now there's ogres, okay?
Ogres? Man, I got an ogre slaying knife. It's got a +9 against ogres.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Okay, but if there's any girls there, I want to do them.
There you have it. A frightening look into America's most frightening pastime. Remember that it's not your children's fault that they're being drawn into a satanic world of nightmare. It's their gym teacher's fault for making them feel outcast when they couldn't do one single pull-up.